Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm super excited for you to dive into this episode. Before we start the episode, I want to let you know that I've officially partnered with this amazing company called Play On Relief, and I've been using their products for a few months now, and I love it so much, I wanted to partner with them to let you guys in on all the amazing benefits that I get from it in my training and races, because I frequently get asked, how do you deal with muscle soreness during long runs, during races, or even after long efforts? Of course, the more you train, the less sore you'll be, but let's face it, long runs can still hurt, especially in a race. So to help with my own soreness, I've been using this topical spray called Play On during my long runs and races, and it is a game changer for aches, pains, and muscle soreness because it zaps the soreness away in seconds and lasts a really, really long time. It's so easy to use too, and I don't have to rub it in. No mess, it's just a spray on. I can't really get enough of it for my muscles on the long runs, in races, and recovery, and it's sweat resistant. When you spray it on, it goes to work in seconds because it goes beyond the skin and into the muscle and joints directly where the soreness is to reduce pain at the source. And that's different than other CBD creams or icy hot that are just on the skin level. And plus, it's all natural, FDA compliant, and backed by 10 years of research, so it's legit. I hate putting stuff in my body filled with chemicals, so that's why I like the natural mixture of Play On. And because of Play On, it helped me to battle extreme leg soreness at this year's Javelina 100 at mile 60, and it even helped my fiance with some gnarly hip pain at mile 15 of her first 50K. So I'm telling you folks, if you deal with aches and pains or you're looking to be less sore in your next ultra and on your long runs, you gotta try this out. And because I love this product so much and I want you to try it out, Play On is going to give you a special holiday discount on your next order. All you need to do is use the code EverydayUltra at checkout to get a special holiday discount of 20% off your order at the link in the show notes, or go to playonrelief.com. That's going to playonrelief.com to get a 20% off your order with the code EverydayUltra at checkout, and that way you can try it to be less sore, keep running strong, and play on. Thanks so much, everybody. Let's get into the episode, and thank you so much for being here. Everybody, welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione. It's so funny because right before we hit record, I literally said to our guest today, I was like, I think the intro song to this podcast should be Hips Don't Lie. And then I kind of thought about it and I was like, with our guest being in the hips world, she probably hears that joke a million times. So probably not great class on my end.
No, I thought it was perfect, Joe.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's good. Good to hear that it was perfect. And I'm excited about this episode because we are talking all things hips when it comes to running. And let me tell you, this is like one of the most important areas of our body when it comes to running. Of course, legs and feet, like those are usually the champions when it comes to running, but really your hips, I mean, they're the source of our power. They're the source of so many different areas where, you know, we can potentially have injuries as well. And they're just such a crucial part that I personally feel like, and when I even started in the sport, was shocked to see like how much runners neglect hips, especially ultra runners when we're putting so much stress on our body. So I could not think of just a more relevant topic to have on today and a more useful topic from an amazing and knowledgeable guest with Dr. Sarah. Now, Dr. Sarah, she is a physical therapist. She helps predominantly women, but also the knowledge applies to men as well, with hip pain, return to running confidently and comfortably all over the United States, which is amazing. She works with tons of clients to help them rehab hip injuries to make sure their hips are strong. And ultimately, she helps people to get back to running pain-free and have the strong hips they need to cross the finish line as well. And she is coming out with a new book really, really soon, which is super cool. That's all about how to help women with hip pain to run pain-free, which is super exciting. And she's just all around an awesome person. She also hosts her own podcast. I mean, she does all the things in the world of hips. So we're going to dive into why hips are important, how to make your hips strong, how to prevent injuries, how to deal with injuries if you're dealing with them, and just have a fun conversation all about hips with no other than Dr. Sarah. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. So great having you here.
Thanks so much for having me on, Joe. I'm excited to talk about literally my favorite topic of all time.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm excited to have you on too, because it's a field you're super knowledgeable in. And by the way, also before we dive into, you're also training for your first ultra, which is super exciting. First 50K. Like, how are you feeling with that?
First 50K. I feel so excited. I was actually just talking about this with one of my clients. We are ex-road racers, and we were like talking about how excited we were. She's training for her first 50K also. And we were talking about how excited we were about like running those extra miles than like compared to just being on like a road marathon. And we're like, there's just something about it that running 26.2 miles just doesn't sound exciting, but running like those extra couple miles on a trail just sounds so much more exciting and so much more fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And that means like you are an ultra runner at heart. Like the more distance, the more excitement. Like that just shows that you are just ready for this 50K from just an excitement approach, which is so exciting. And your training has been awesome. By the way, I've been working with Sarah too, putting together a training plan and things like that too, which has been super, super cool to see her progress. But anyways, let's talk about hips. And I guess before we kind of talk about like, you know, the how to prevent injury and how to make them stronger, everything, why are hips so important for runners? Because as I kind of mentioned earlier, a lot of the times we focus on the legs, the knees, the feet, right? Kind of like the standard things, but generally hips kind of, you know, aren't the first thing to come to mind. So talk to me about like the importance of hips for runners and why we should be more mindful of them if we want to have a sustainable career in ultra running.
Yeah, for sure. So I get this question a lot, and I have a twofold answer. So a lot of times people will be like, Sarah, why are hips the most important thing? And like, why is it the thing that you've like dedicated your whole career to? And the first thing I always say is, I don't think that they're the most important thing for runners. Like, I think that they're just the thing that I'm the most passionate about. I've dealt with my own hip injury, and I've worked with obviously lots of women who have dealt with hip injuries as well. And it's just a thing that I like, it just lights me up. I just like keeps me up at night. It's the thing that I like doing the most research for, taking the most con ed for. So I don't think it's the most important, but I do think it is like an important piece of the puzzle. Something that is really important for runners, which our whole body works to do this in conjunction with one another. But as runners, we basically want to conserve energy. So as we're like running forward, our body is going through all of these different planes of motion. So if you think of like there's rotation going through our pelvis, there's like side bend going through our pelvis, there's all of these ranges of motion. And we want to be the most energy conserved or the most efficient. And our hips are really like the steering wheel of doing that. So if we're having too much hip drop on one side, or if we're having an over rotation on one side, maybe it's not the hip that is leading that. Maybe it's, you know, too much pronation at the foot, or maybe it's too much like diving inward of the knee that's driving that. Like the driver is really the most important thing. But the hips are a huge area that we could see losing energy and being less efficient, which is going to lead to potentially injury. It's going to lead to having slower ultra marathon times, which we don't want. So there's so many things that the hips do, and energy conservation is a huge, huge piece of it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I love that you approached it like from the angle of energy conservation and not so much just like, because I think when people think of hips, they think of a lot of like stability, but like to your point, they help us to conserve energy, which as you know, like as you said too, in an ultra is like so, 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 so important. So I love that you approached it from that angle. And obviously we'll talk about like if someone kind of has trouble in hips, but maybe someone's listening to this and maybe they don't have hip pain yet, but, and you kind of mentioned a few things like right off the bat of like, you know, maybe you're pronating too much. Are there any like tests that maybe you would suggest for people to assess their hips and like making sure that they're not going towards a direction that might lead to injury, or like just maybe they're leaving performance on the table by not addressing some imbalances in their hips that they know, or I should say that they should know to correct in their training to get the most results and conserve the most energy?
For sure, for sure. So I'll give you a couple of different options for this one, and I'll start the simplest and then go the most complex. So really, truly, when you are looking at someone's, you know, running mechanics or their form, you can look at it even in like the simplest form of like standing on a single limb. Like if you're standing on your right leg compared to your left leg, how does that feel? Like, how does it look? And maybe if you're a person who doesn't have as much of a trained eye as like a physical therapist or someone who works with, you know, lots of people and kind of has great knowledge of the body, you might not see these things, but you might feel it. You might feel, wow, it's really hard for me to stabilize my left side as I'm standing on a single limb. Or, oh, I actually kind of notice that like my whole body rotates over this side, and you can see these slight differences. So that's the simplest way to do it independently. And then you could ramp that up to doing a full movement screen independently. You could do a full movement screen with a physical therapist. Moving up the chain, you could also do like a running gait analysis. There's tons of different options and plans for that across the country. But I would just say, like, as a runner, if you're someone who's like invested in your running long term and you want to be really preventative, just getting someone to look at you that has a trained eye to kind of just see maybe where your weakest link might be, because that's likely the place that your injury is going to show up if you are going to be injured down the line.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure those things kind of perpetuate with like the more volume, because even if you have the imbalance, maybe at like a lower volume when you're either earlier on in your training or maybe even training for something like a half marathon or a 10K or something like that, those things can potentially be more exacerbated if you're training for higher volume and maybe you're increasing intensity and things like that. Is that generally like the kind of path that people get down a lot if they have imbalances but they're not injured yet kind of thing?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like, I always like to say everyone has a different like tissue tolerance based off of where they're at. For some people, like they might be able to run, you know, 60 miles per week before they start to notice something. Some people it's a little bit earlier on. And there was a really cool stat that the head of Run DNA told me, and it was something like, each injury is like, it's like 3 to 4 weeks, like post-dated. So it was like you started to show this, you know, this injury, and it was like your form started to break down, but you're not feeling the injury until 3 to 4 weeks, like after you kind of started to hit that higher mileage. So it's always just good to be ahead of the curve and like trying to be on a preventative mindset as a runner.
Wow, that's fascinating to hear, like the 3 to 4 kind of thing, because you know, you might just still be at that point. It's really a self-fulfilling prophecy when you're thinking that, hey, it's okay to keep ramping up my volume as like aggressively as I am, or adding in the speed work and things like that, when you're already like pushing yourself so far back. But like within those 3 weeks, you can continue to build or do what you're doing to get you there in the first place unsafely to drive it down a further hole, which is interesting. And you mentioned kind of like the preventative measures, which is definitely something I'm curious about. And obviously we'll talk about like the, you know, the more healing kind of measures if someone's listening and they're like, oh, I know I'm dealing with bad hips right now or anything. But maybe from the preventive standpoint, like how can runners be proactive to do it if they haven't had an injury, or maybe like they're feeling good right now and they want to add something in their routine or months or whatever kind of things to help to take that preventative approach to, you know, have or avoid injury and increase performance?
For sure. Yeah. So I would say this, and honestly, like, I feel like if I say this, I could just hang up the podcast and this could be the last thing I say. That's how important this is. But really, truly, I can't say this enough. Strength training is like the most easiest, I mean, it's not easy, but it's like the most beneficial thing that we could do as runners. Like, there is just so many like great reasons why I could think that strength training is the best. And I will say, like, it doesn't have to be this like big extensive thing. Like, you don't have to belong to like the fanciest gym. You don't have to have the fanciest equipment, but just something that is like consistently loading your legs, loading you in, like in a single limb pattern. So you're like doing single leg specific exercises, and also like strength training where you're like standing on your feet. Like, there's just so many moves out there where, especially for the hips, where we're like, you know, doing clamshells and hip extensions and just like wiggling our legs around. But like when we're running, we're standing, we're on our feet, we're jumping, we're moving, and we need to load our body as such.
Yeah, I so many reasons why I love that answer. I think the first thing is like, you know, in the world, and I'm not trying to like say that they're bad things, but in the world now where like everybody's doing the cold plunge and the sauna and everything, and those things are great. I'm not knocking it, but a lot of the times I feel like the answer, like just shown by studies and things like that, to have, you know, strong joints and muscles and making sure that you are, you know, helping to be durable to not lead to injury is strength training. And so I love that you have that at the forefront, right? More so than massage or like stretching or like things like that. Like the strength is where it's at too. I thought it was also interesting that you mentioned more exercises on your feet. Cause yeah, you see things like all the time with like clamshells and things like hip bridges and like, you know, things where you're kind of lying on the ground, or I love the word you use, like kind of kicking your legs around. So what are some exercises that you would say like are like the pinnacle of like hip strength and ones that you would recommend for runners to implement in their strength training routine to help them have strong hips?
For sure. So I'm going to give you my hack. This is what I try to get to for all of my athletes, especially ones that are in my maintenance program and they're just kind of like rocking and rolling with their strength training sessions. So this is my hack. I want everyone to strength train in all three planes of motion. So that means that you're doing exercises like squats and lunges and single leg squats where you're like facing forward and you're moving in the sagittal plane. I want everyone to do exercises in the frontal plane. So where you're like, think of like moving side to side. So something like lateral lunges or like side planks are in the frontal plane. And then lastly, moving in the transverse plane. So this is like rotational motions. And this is, this one is a little bit harder to think of ideas because it's kind of like a weird plane of motion to move in. But stuff like hip airplanes or side planks with like rotation, like if you think of like a thread the needle, something like that. Those are just a couple suggestions. But what we're doing with moving in all three planes of motion is that we're training our muscles through hopefully the full range, and allowing ourselves to build integrity with those muscles throughout their full range of motion in all the different ranges.
I like how you broke that up because it is like different ranges of motions that the hips have and you're attacking from it with all different angles, which is great because like you're kind of getting a more holistic kind of strength program, which is awesome. And is there maybe an ideal amount of times that you kind of see optimal for strength training, or like what's kind of, if you were to prescribe someone, I guess like I'll give you two kind of maybe scenarios, right? Like maybe there's one person who they have a lot of time, they're willing to put it in and like, you're kind of giving them like the optimal thing that they can do. And then maybe the second person is someone who maybe is like a little bit more crunch for time, right? They have kids, they have a full-time job, they have like a very, you know, busy kind of schedule. And maybe it's the same for both. Maybe it's different for both. Curious to hear. But like for those two different kinds of people, like what would be kind of like your prescription of like dose in terms of like frequency and kind of what they're doing with their hip strength routine?
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for bringing this up because honestly, I'm so passionate about dosage. I think in my training, I did residency and fellowship training and through physical therapy, and we just got so hammered with like, okay, what dosage are you doing? What intention are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? So I think it's something that's really missed and I'm really passionate about. But I would say for the person who's like, you know, max 10 out of 10 busy, and they're like, I know I need to do this, but I don't have all the time in the world. It's okay if you do minimum one day a week. Like if you're just getting it in one day a week, that's okay. If you have all the time in the world, I mean, you could do three sessions a week where you're breaking it up into those three different planes of motion. And I think another parameter I will say is like, if you're in a ultra marathon build, if you're in a marathon build or a race build, it's okay if you're just getting it in one day a week. And then it's important to have that off-season time that you can actually try to build strength. So you're not trying to build strength and like do a huge push while you're in a race build. Like when you're in a race build, you want to be in maintenance work because your legs are tired from doing all of the running that you need to do to train.
I love that you broke that down that way because that's like exactly like even just for any other types of strength, like how I would look at it with an athlete in the same way is like saying like, you know, during the build, during the ultra marathon, during like the long runs and the big kind of training, like one day a week is really all you need, but it's that off season, like where you can really hone on that strength. So it sounds like in the off season, that's where you suggest to kind of do more of the focus work towards the strength, where like the strength is more of the focus. Whereas, you know, kind of during the other period, I mean, obviously it's still a little bit of a focus if you're doing one time a week, but you know, you're kind of putting a greater emphasis on it in that kind of off season. Whereas like you're, I hate the word maintenance, like, so I don't want to use the word maintenance, but like lesser dosage in the bigger builds. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. And like think about it this way. Like, if you don't like the word maintenance, which that's totally fair, it's like the same way if you, like, let's say you had terrible cholesterol and like your doctor was like, dude, you like got to get on top of this. Like, this is just terrible. And you're like, I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to like really work on this. And let's say you eat super healthy and you go back to the doctor and your numbers are just looking spectacular. Like, you're not just going to go back to your old lifestyle of just eating all of the things that like got you there in the first place. Like, you're going to like try to maintain your, you know, healthy levels of cholesterol by eating, you know, some healthier foods throughout the week and still enjoying other foods that you might have previously enjoyed, and just kind of having that mix in. It's the same with strength training. Like, when you're in the season, like, you want to sprinkle it in, but you don't have to like go as hard as you were going when you were quote unquote like trying to bring your cholesterol down.
Oh, that's such a great analogy. That's such a great analogy. And like, I even heard like a similar analogy on a podcast I was listening to where they were talking about just like, if you were to drop something in like the high build period, like just because, you know, you don't have the time or like things are too much, it's like you would never do that about running, to be like, oh, I've done all the work in the past and like, you know, we're just not going to run these next few weeks, like right before our ultra. Right. So I love how you had that analogy in there, because it's so true. And I think, you know, it's one of those things that I think is important to do, especially when you're building that high volume and high mileage and maybe a little bit more intense stuff, just to at least keep it in there, because those are things that we're putting more pressure on our body. And essentially we need it to be more resilient in there, which I think is awesome. Now, kind of pivoting a little bit into like, let's just say someone historically has some hip pain, right? Like, they, maybe it's a person who's saying like, oh, like anytime I run past like, you know, 60 miles a week, I get hip pain. Or maybe just like they've had on and off hip injuries, or maybe they just like are currently dealing with a hip injury and they have no idea how to kind of approach it. I guess like the first and foremost, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I guess we'll double click on it. And, you know, obviously it stems from the imbalances, like you kind of mentioned before and things like that, and maybe not as strong, but like, why do you think like really people kind of get injured? Is it just as simple as the imbalances or things like that? Or maybe someone who has like chronic injuries, like, I'm curious to hear like your take on, because a lot of people, like, they say, this is the way that I am, but there's probably a cause. And so
yeah,
curious to hear your intake on that before we kind of go into like the, you know, recovery measures and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to be a huge nerd here and just, there's so many reasons that you can be injured or feel pain. Like, just to go through some of the structures. I mean, all the time people will message me, it's my hip flexor. And I'm like, how do you know it's your hip flexor? And they're like, well, it's in the front of my hip. And I'm like, well, in the front of your hip, I mean, there's vascular structures that could be compromised. There's bone, there's muscle, there's capsule, there's fascia, there's ligaments, there's tendons, there's all of these different tissues. And when you go to a physical therapist, it's their job to try to like determine and decide, okay, what is like the primary tissue that is driving your pain? I mean, there's nerve, there's disc, there's so many things that could be going on in the hip, or, you know, really anywhere in the body. So first of all, it's important to decide like, okay, what structure is irritated? And then we also want to determine the why it's irritated. And the why can be largely broken down into three categories. And it can also be, it doesn't have to be like exclusively each category. Like, you can have a little bit of each. So the three categories are mechanical. So this is like the most common with runners. It's like, you know, once I get to that 60 mile mark, my form starts to break down. Therefore, I'm having hip collapse and I'm getting anterior hip impingement. That's mechanical. It's like the stress is causing the muscles or the, you know, the area to be irritated. Number two is chemical. So this could be like, let's say you have a nerve issue or like a disc issue and you've herniated a disc. There's like chemical changes that are going on that are actually causing your body to have like these pain responses. And then that's why you're feeling pain. This is not uncommon with the hip. Like, you can have stuff going on in the low back that does refer down to the hip area. And like, you can even feel like, oh, this is actually just my hip, but really it's coming from your low back. That's how kind of like disassociated it can be with what's actually going on. And then the last one is psychosocial. So if they're, you know, the way that you experience the world and experience pain is really it's coming in via like all of these different things. So if you're having like a ton of stress, like you're like peak stressed, and let's say you have a past hip injury, you actually might be like revealing some of that stress into your hip because that's how your body is like, you know, dealing with this. Similarly to maybe you're, you know, really, really inflamed. Like maybe you have, like you've been eating a ton of like high inflammatory foods, you know, that is something that can be causing like this kind of chronic pain, or like psychosocial bucket to be increasing your pain. So there's just so many different ways that we can experience and feel pain as runners. And I think it's just important to understand where you're at and like what's driving you.
That's so interesting. And I definitely want to go into like kind of how the treatment looks for each of them. But there's one that I think is interesting that I kind of wanted to double click on for a second, was the psychosocial thing, because I've even experienced many times, like, you know, I used to do yoga a lot, like way before my running days. Admittedly, don't do it as much anymore. But in the days, like I remember, like, and even it would happen to me, but you know, you'd be in yoga class and like, you know, you'd get into pigeon pose or some sort of like hip opening kind of thing. And like people would just be crying, not because of the pain, but like because like they're what the yoga teacher described as like kind of this like emotional release kind of thing. Is that kind of related to like the psychosocial thing? Just out of pure curiosity here, maybe anyone else who's kind of heard those things.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So this like psychosocial or psychosomatic, there's like so many different names for it, but it's really, it's almost like the state of our nervous system. So our nervous system is like our brain and like our spinal cord, like our central nervous system, and our body is very protective of it because it encompasses like the thing that keeps us like living and breathing and moving, which is, you know, our brain and our spinal cord. And if you are, you know, if you're really, really stressed, well, that's a relative attack to your central nervous system.
Yeah.
If you like are, you know, I keep bringing up this inflammatory thing, but that's just what I can think of now. If you're like in a really high inflammatory state via, you know, eating a lot of things or also just having stress, that's also a relative attack to the nervous system. And when that is wound up, it can wind up pain in other areas. And then when you go to do a release to, you know, like you said, like the pigeon pose, I mean, that is like, that brings you into this like parasympathetic or like peaceful state. And it kind of attacks that nervous system and says, hey, like, this is actually like, you're actually okay right now. Like there's nothing that's really going on that you have to be so wound up and stressed with. And then you can have that either like pain release or even that like emotional release. And something that's fascinating is running is actually a huge way to, or it's one way that you can, tap into that parasympathetic or peaceful nervous system state, and allow your, like maybe some of those pain levels to go down. There's different variables that play into that because running can also be a relative stressor. So that's kind of a back and forth thing, but that's one way to tap into it.
It's super fascinating to hear, just because, and I think it goes back to a training principle I always think about. It's like stress mentally has like a similar effect on our body than the miles that we're putting in, right? It's like that is always that was a concept when I first learned it, just like blew my mind. And I think it even relates so much more where it transpires into something that, you know, can affect like our hip pains and things like that, because like our body's literally trying to protect the most important parts of our body that keep us alive, which is so interesting. And like, that's like the function of like our body and everything is to keep us alive. So of course it's going to have this like vicious effect on us, like when we are trying to maybe introduce things that, you know, are going to threaten those things, which is really, really interesting. Kind of going back to like your first thing, right? We have like the diagnosis. Now I'm assuming, just based on like the conversation that we're having, that like strength training is going to be probably the way to, you know, remediate any injury that's kind of in there. But I guess before we kind of talk about like the prescriptive measures, with the cause, is there any variation of how we would treat our hips based on like if it is mechanical or if it is, you know, psychosocial or any of those kind of things, chemical, like you mentioned, like does the treatment differ for each of those three?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. So if it is psychosocial, like I actually was just talking to a gal last week who has like really severe hip pain and she's actually going through like an eating disorder. So like, obviously I'm not the person that's fit to treat her. And like, I'm not the one that's going to get to the root cause of her pain. So if it's highly psychosocial, I mean, physical therapists are somewhat trained in that, but like better to refer out or just have like treatment in conjunction. If it's chemical there, that will take time. Like that will just take that natural time to allow healing, especially if it's like a disc herniation. We're not having anyone like run through that at all.
Yeah.
So there's certain measures that you can take for that. And then, for the mechanical, so something that's so cool. And again, I'm just a huge nerd about this is every single tissue in the body. So what I said, like nerve, bone, joint, fascia, all of those things, they have something called an optimal stimulus for repair. So you can actually dose exercise to heal cartilage or to allow cartilage to feel better. You can dose exercise for tendons. You can dose exercise for muscles. And when you figure out kind of what the primary cause is, you can start to utilize specific exercise to like restore the integrity of your tendon, muscle, whatever it is. So yeah, the treatment is, it's not just strength training and it's actually like prescriptive exercise in the way that you would take like, you know, prescriptive medication to make something better.
Hey everybody, just wanted to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to johng.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. Yeah, so it's not like a one size fits all kind of thing. You have to like know exactly what you're treating, right? Tendon, cartilage, because like it would depend based on maybe the area that you're kind of going at, correct?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. And so maybe for some, like what I guess is the most common, I would say, because it sounds like mechanical is probably the most common, like just especially in runners, like what's kind of like maybe the most common areas that people generally get in trouble with, or maybe that come to you mostly, you know, when they're runners and they kind of have hip pain. And yeah, I guess like what are some of the most common stuff that people have?
Yeah, for sure. So mechanical is for sure the most common in runners. Yeah. I will say typically, I would say the number one complaint I'll get is like anterior hip pain. And that is often going to be from like compression of the anterior hip structure. So we can think muscle, we can think kind of joint. So those two structures. Number two is probably lateral. Lateral hip pain is probably going to be more muscular, like irritation from some of the hip rotators, or maybe even like irritation of the bursa from mechanical stress. And then the last one is like kind of posterior hip deep glute pain. Sometimes people can have like labral tears back there. Sometimes it's like piriformis, or oftentimes that can be related to low back referrals as well.
Yeah, no. And then I've had bursitis in the past. I've even had, I guess like high hamstring, which would technically, it's like the hip attacher too. And so like, I know yeah. like those things are just, you know, they hurt when you get them for sure. And it's so, you know, interesting to see a lot of these common things that can pop up in the runners, because it's generally like a very similar thing that, you know, people kind of run into when it comes to like hip imbalances with runners and things like that. So how would you generally treat those kind of things? Which I guess first and foremost, like what are maybe some myths, right? I always like to talk about like the myths first, because, you know, anyone could pop on Instagram and be like, you know, I've been taking Athletic Greens for like, you know, 5 weeks and I feel better now or something like yeah. that, right? But like, what are some of the myths? And like, I know you mentioned like labral tear in there, and like we were kind of talking about that before the podcast too. So I guess before we talk into the prescriptive measures, like what are things that people, I shouldn't say shouldn't do, but like maybe bad advice that's kind of out there that people should look out for?
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to try to just knock a few of them out here. Okay. So I think there's so many, but I think some of the biggest myths I see online, or I'll see with people who have come to me, is that they have been told that their glutes aren't firing when they're running, which like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like if you're standing and moving, like your glutes are firing for sure. Maybe they're not firing at like the highest capacity, or maybe they're not like recruiting in the right moment of the cycle. But they're for sure firing, and just turning your glutes on. Like I don't really even know how someone does that with, I don't know. That's a huge myth. I feel like it's deeper than that. Another one is that it's all about the glute med. So it's like your glute med is weak, and then that's why you're experiencing hip pain, or that's why you're experiencing knee pain. And we just have to do clamshells. Like just doing clamshells forever is not going to, you know, take away your hip or knee pain. Another myth is, we talked about this earlier, but labral tears. Like I feel like there's a huge, there's a lot of fear, and it's getting better because the research is starting to emerge more and become a little bit more mainstream. Whereas previously it was like, if you have a labral tear, you really should, you really should get surgery, and you probably shouldn't get back to running. But there are so many people who have gotten back to really high level running with a labral tear. And there's like a staggering stat that something like 50% of the population has a labral tear. And most people don't even know it. Yeah, like most people don't even know it. And they're just running on these labral tears. And it's like, it's not even a big deal. Some people are symptomatic, and it is a big deal. But a lot of people have them and don't know it.
Well, and that's just because it's like asymptomatic. Like you might just have it, but not like have any pain or like any signals of it, correct?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, it's similar to the way that like we age and wrinkle in our skin. We age and wrinkle on the inside of our body, and we're just naturally going to have degeneration in certain spots, and we might just like literally not feel it at all.
I see. So yeah, it's almost like a natural kind of part of like maybe how things like deteriorate over time, where it's like,
yeah.
And like when people hear tear though, I bet like that's like, is that the thing that, you know, sets people off, where it's like tear and it's like, oh God, now we got to ring the alarms and that kind of stuff?
Yes, for sure. Like the trauma of hearing tear is so significant. And to be honest, I mean, the labrum is a sensitive area. And if you have pain from a labral tear and it's been confirmed, like I don't want to downplay that because that is a lot, but oftentimes it's like the labrum is not the primary generator, and we'll have pain via the adductor tendon, hamstring tendon. There'll be like increased, like, you know, swelling to the bursas around it. Like there's a lot of other things that could be driving your pain. And it doesn't just have to be from the tear. So the tear doesn't have to be the, you know, the halting word.
That's a really, really good distinction to make, because anytime we hear the word like tear, usually it's associated with like, you know, the famous ones like ACL tear and MCL tear, where it's like those things you're out of the game for like for a good amount of it, even like a meniscus tear, right? So that's a good distinction on there, and I like how you address a lot of those myths, because there is a lot of content out there that kind of goes around that. And so and you said something that I thought was awesome. It's like, we need to go deeper than that. Like yeah. when you're talking about kind of like the myths and stuff. So is that going deeper, just like prescriptive strength training? Like, I guess like what would kind of be the protocol to like help someone to heal some of these common hip injuries?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So that's a great question. I think the going deeper is working with a physical therapist, working with a strength coach, working with someone who has gotten the results that you want. I think just like going, like, honestly, it's okay to be the annoying person and you call the PT clinic and you say, hey, do you have a physical therapist who has worked with an ultra runner before and like has gotten the back to ultra running? Or do you have a physical therapist who's gotten someone back to, you know, that has a labral tear and like has gotten back to running a 10K? Like, that's okay to ask those questions. And like, I think there's sometimes like this push between in-network and out-of-network providers. Like, you can find them anywhere and like, it's okay to be annoying. It's not annoying really. And I think going deeper is asking those questions and then just understanding the why. So if you, you know, work with a PT or strength coach and saying, hey, like, why do you think this is going on? They should be able to give you some sort of answer of like, well, I think it's A, B, and C. And if it's not, then we're going to keep doing more work to figure out what the root cause is.
Yeah. And I love how you, it wasn't just the answer of like, go to PT. It's like, go to PT that like is getting the result that you want, because I can share from my personal experience. Like, I went to PTs for, quite frankly, it was a hip issue. Like, this was years ago. I went for a hip issue and basically PT wasn't a runner, hadn't really worked on runners. It was just kind of like a general PT, which again is fine. Like, I'm not knocking those kind of things, but it was like, I was told like, don't run at all and like things like that and blah, blah, blah. And like, I wasn't making progress and like everything. And then I went to a PT who was a runner and was an ultra runner themselves and also had worked with tons of ultra runners. Found out that like my thing was completely misdiagnosed. I was okay to run. They were like, yeah, you can totally run on this. Just like be safe. And I was like, what the heck? And so like, and then that healed up like so quickly. So I love how you point out that specificity and like saying it's okay to like ask questions and do these things, especially because like running is such a nuanced thing that not knocking any PT who hasn't worked with runners or isn't a runner, but there are just some things that I think get like the misconception, like, you know, don't run and kind of things like that. And like, is hip pain okay to run on? I guess like that's like the question, because I know, listen, like the thing that a lot of times people don't want to hear as runners is like, you can't run and blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, like, you know, I want to cover my ears anytime I hear that, but like, is it okay to run on hip pain? Like, I guess that's the million dollar question that I'm sure everybody's probably tuning this podcast to really hear into, along with how to heal it for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a loaded question. And I mean, obviously, it depends on person to person. But I always say, okay, what's your tissue tolerance? So let's say you're a runner and you're able to run, you know, 30 minutes totally pain free on some hilly surfaces at an easy pace. But if you increase to maybe a tempo run and doing that tempo run is the thing that gets you on that same surface, well, your tissue tolerance is, you know, the first thing that I explained and not the second. The speed is kind of the thing that like increases and increases your pain. So if you have a tissue tolerance that you're able to run and it's totally pain-free, it's likely a green flag that you're able to run. If you notice that tissue tolerance is starting to get less, then it's saying that you're actually getting worse. And it's probably not a great idea to keep running on your own. It's probably a great idea to get some help and get someone to help you intercede with that. If you're someone who, like, I had a gal came to me, she had been to two other PTs. They had done an x-ray and they said she was fine to keep running. And she came to me and because she was like, you know what, Sarah, something's just not feeling right. And her tissue tolerance was so poor. She couldn't stand on a single limb without having pain. And to me, that's immediately like, we need to rule out a bone stress injury. And because her tissue tolerance was so poor, I was like, we need to go. And sure as heck, I referred her to a doctor who got her an MRI and she had two stress fractures in her sacrum. And they were like almost fully cut through the bone. And you know, so that's an instance where like, okay, obviously it's not okay to keep running. So if you're if your tolerance is so low that you can't, you know, stand on a single limb or get through your day to day pain-free, like then don't run.
Yeah, 100%. I love that you talked about like the stress fractures is like a hard no, because yeah, that stuff is serious. And like, we've seen a lot of professional athletes in the ultra running space, like getting stress fractures. It's not a thing that's not common for sure. And it's the one thing that is very, very dangerous to run on for sure. I guess like I'm assuming MRI sounds like the surefire way to kind of do it, but it just sounds like if you have any sort of stress fracture, like don't be running on it at all. Like, why is that? Like, I guess like what is it just like the risk is too high? And I'm curious to hear that from your side. Obviously, like I have my view, like if an athlete's coming to me for whatever reason, they have bone stuff, it's never happened to me. But if it does, like my rule in the back of my head is like, you're not running, you're getting checked out. And like, this is serious. So I take the same stance as you, but I guess for the people who are maybe like, I can run through it and things like that, like what's the why kind of behind that?
Yeah, for sure. So the stress fracture is what we call an evolving thing. So it's not stable, and it can actually become worse in the way that you can, like a stress fracture is like, or a bone stress injury is maybe what we'll say. Like there starts to become irritation of the bone, and there's like there's a gradient. Starts to become irritation in the bone, and if you have like a stress reaction, okay, the bone's a little bit irritated. If you start to have a stress fracture, you're starting to like cut through part of the bone. The fear is that you could actually like sever the bone and have like a full on fracture. Like if you think of a traumatic fracture where you like fall and like your arm like is cut in half, like it's the same thing that can happen. And that is obviously a huge problem for so many reasons. So the fact that that could be the end result if you're pushing through it is why it's so severe to just like completely halt.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And even just thinking about like a bone like the sacrum or like anything like in the pelvis, like that is just, it just sounds so much more impactful than just like a foot or anything like that, where probably like most common stress fractures, like it sounds like from a lot of runners that I've talked to, is like foot area. But like, man, like cracking a sacrum definitely does not sound like the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. And there's different severities. So like depending upon where your stress fracture is, like the foot is a lower severity because the bone isn't as dense and thick. Whereas like the pelvis and the hip is like, I mean, that's super, super thick bone. So if you're actually having like degradation of that area, it's revealing that you're either putting too much stress through the hip or your body is not, or your hip like is not sufficient enough to withstand the stress that you're putting in. Which can, I mean, both of the, that can be from a, like a running perspective of like, okay, you're running too much, or it can be from like a systemic perspective of which, like you, maybe you're not fueling enough. Maybe you're not sleeping enough. Mm-hmm. Like you're not having enough, like internal things to turn over your bone to meet the demands of which you're trying to place on it with running.
Oh yeah. You're hitting all the right points that I just love like to hear, because yeah, like the stress fracture isn't always just a factor of the volume you're putting in. Like it really is like the nutrients, nutrition, like stress, like it's so many different things. And like a lot of the times, like stress fractures like can be caused by just not fueling in times of high volume or high intensity, because like your bones are not getting, or even just your muscles to keep the bones stable, aren't getting the nutrients they need to like be strong and repair themselves. And so I love that you made that distinction there. It's like not just the volume or the work, like it's just such a multifactorial thing when it comes to where these things can develop. Now, I love to kind of go back on like, you know, if someone can run, it's not a stress fracture. They kind of rolled it out. It's more kind of muscle stuff. I love how you kind of had the approach on, you know, just kind of doing the tissue test and maybe going for an easy run and kind of seeing how symptoms are. If great, progress. If not, maybe we kind of lay down along the way, which is awesome too. And then do we be a little bit more aggressive with the strength training, I guess, like amidst the running too? Like, I know you mentioned the 3 days. Is that still kind of the general protocol? And I'm sure it depends on PT to PT. And obviously, like if it is like an injury that's getting worse, like going to a PT is probably going to be the way to go. But is it still, you know, 3 days a week, or is it more intensive where you're up in the strength, kind of lowering the running? I guess like how does that kind of distribution work between like strength while you're also maybe still continuously running?
Yeah, for sure. So it obviously depends on what the tissue is and what the, you know, root cause is. Right. But As far as exercise prescription, so strength can really be broken down into multiple different categories. So you can have like motor control, where you're like just working on moving more efficiently, and that might be like your thing. Like you might have like terrible control over your left hip, which is why you're going into hip drop and you've developed this labral tear. So that's one thing. We can have like endurance-based strength training where we're training more for, can we control our left hip, you know, over a long period of time. And then we can move into strength, where are we strong over our left hip, or even power, like can we move fast? So it depends where you're at along that continuum. Something like motor control is less taxing on the body. So I mean, sometimes I'll have my athletes do it daily. If that's too much for, you know, their mental load, then I'll have them do it every other day. If we're moving into more of the like endurance and strength categories, like two to three times a week is probably the max, so they can like have great times of recovery in between. And then if we're working in like power or plyometrics, I'll probably have them train that like 1 to 2 times a week max, and just kind of fit that into also what I'm having them do for running, because also running is rehab. And like, if we're trying to get back to running, we need our clients to be running.
Yeah. Oh, you just like probably made every person on this podcast happy to hear that. No, that is awesome.
And that's my goal.
Yeah, exactly. And one quick thing I do want to also pull from there, which I thought was interesting, is like plyometrics. Like, why are those so beneficial? Because it is something that and I rarely do them. I'll do like box jumps like here and there, like every once in a while. But I know that they can be incredibly important for the body. So talk to me about like how plyometrics can help, like also like in a healing sense, but also just maybe even just like a maintenance kind of exercise as well.
Yeah, for sure. So plyometrics are tricky because especially if you're someone who's like in season and you're like training really hard, I mean, you're having a ton of plyometric load with running, but you're having a ton of like, you know, force going through your bones and joints as you're constantly running. But plyometrics are a great way to train your strength or your speed over like a fast, or your strength over like a fast amount of time. So we're getting like really, really great power into the area. So it can be something that it can be like a huge key to the puzzle if you're someone who gets a little bit more flared up with speed work. So it's a way to work your joints, your muscles, your ligaments, tendons, and whatnot through a really fast speed to build it up to allow you to do speed work more comfortably. Really, it's just like we're trying with quote unquote strength training or plyometric training to supersede the capacity that you need to perform when you're running, so that when you're running, it's a little bit easier on your body.
And that makes a lot of sense, especially like maybe if you're coming off a period of lower volume or you're doing like more intense stuff with high impact, like you're kind of like gradually loading in that impact before you're just like putting the shoes on and ripping a few intervals, so to say, to like get it in there. It's kind of almost like strides in a way, like where, you know, if any athlete hasn't been doing speed work for a while, like I usually put them on strides for, you know, anywhere between, you know, 2 to 6 weeks, depending on like what their kind of history is with it, just so I like their body can get used to just like that small dose of increased impact before throwing it in. Like I always say, like, you know, if you just throw speed work on a schedule when someone hasn't done speed work before, it's a one-way ticket to the PT office. And that's nothing we never want, but it's similar too, I can imagine, when you're kind of going through this rehab period before you even just jump into, you know, running at full capacity again, if you're dealing with some sort of hip injury.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I love that so much. And sometimes like with my athletes, when I'm like thinking of their prescriptive exercises, like I'll totally use strides as like their kind of plyometric to see like how they're responding to it, instead of having them just like do jumps up and down. It's like for them, it's more exciting to do a stride than it is to like do a million box jumps.
Yeah, for sure. And I can even see how like this specificity is just like great. Like all the time, like I even get, you know, questions from other athletes where they're like, hey, like, you know, I'm trying to be a better runner. Like, you know, should I be doing like, you know, altitude training? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? I'm like, you should be running. Like in the end of the day, like, you know, the first thing is like, what's your running schedule like? Like, how do we like make sure that you're getting the right running training? And so similar thing, like, I like how you take that approach with strides, because it's like, it's very specific to the actual athlete as well, which is awesome. Well, this conversation has been super insightful. I mean, this is so awesome just because, you know, it's a lot of great information on a topic that I feel like isn't covered a lot more. And I guess maybe to kind of tail off the program too, like before kind of wrap things up here, I'm curious, like, your thoughts on like hip mobility, right? So we talked a lot about like strength and things like that. Obviously, mobility is kind of like the magic M word that like kind of is thrown around a lot these days and stuff. Like, what are your thoughts on like mobility? Is it as important, or like, you know, how does it rank up with strength? Like, what is your kind of take on hip mobility, and, you know, where kind of stands on the hip strength plane, so to say?
Yeah, for sure. So this is something that I'm really passionate about, because a lot of the women that I work with are hypermobile, and they like mobility work isn't super important for them. But I will say, so most people fall
for into us kind guys, of, we usually suck at mobility. Yeah.
I will say, so you'll fall into kind of one of two categories. And this, you know, again, like, you can kind of be like 60-40 or 70-30, whatever. But you can fall into one of two categories. So you can either be like Tin Man, so you're like super stiff into your hips and you have like no mobility, or you can be like Gumby and you're like me, like my hip is like a helicopter, like it just like flies around in the socket. And for someone like me, I need more stability. So I need to be doing like strength training through the full range of motion to make sure that my hip is not clicking, popping, catching. For someone who's like a Tin Man, they can get away with doing more like mobility work, mobilization, like end range stretching. They're probably going to feel okay. But also for that person, if they're doing strength training through the full range of motion, they will also get some really great mobilization through their hip. And can kill two birds with one stone kind of thing. So I think it's important to like identify where you're at, because if you're the Gumby person and you're doing a bunch of mobility, you're probably going to feel like garbage. And if you're the person who is Tin Man and you're not doing enough mobility, whether that's like true mobility work or strength training through the full range, you also are probably going to feel a little bit like garbage.
That's so freaking good, because like I think a lot of times like people like will think like hip pain and then mobility is the answer all the way, but like it might be because you are very mobile and it's not as stable, and it could lead to like pain in there. So it's like not always mobility. It's going back to like seeing where it's at and prescribing the stuff in there. So I love that you said that on there for sure. And I know a lot of runners like me, like it can be Tin Man for sure. So I know what for a lot of the Gumby runners out there, maybe have to do mobility. It sounds like more stability work is kind of in the abilities or in the right wheelhouse for them to feel a lot better too. And I'm sure you're gonna have a lot of people feeling real good with their hips after this podcast, which is incredible. I mean, I learned a ton. I thought this was super, super valuable. And before I ask my last question here, I just want to say for everyone, please follow along Dr. Sarah's work. I'll be putting her Instagram, her links in the show notes. If you want to book a call with her, I'll put the link in there to do so as well. She's also coming out with her book in the future too, which is going to be super, super exciting to help women get over hip pain so they can start running pain-free again. So all super exciting. I'll put all the links in the show notes. And Dr. Sarah, this was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And for my last question that I'm going to ask you, that I ask every single guest on this podcast, and you already gave a lot of good tips, so it could be a rehash or it could be something new. But my question to you is, because the show is called Everyday Ultra, ethos of the show is helping our listeners be better endurance athletes every day. What can our listeners do every single day to be better endurance athletes?
Oh, that's such a good question, Joe. I think because I've just worked with so many people who are like, oh, I just never thought I'd be able to run again. I think every time you go for a run, whether it was like the worst thing ever, which, you know, we've all been there, or it was the best one, just be so grateful that you're out there, because it's literally such a gift to be able to run. There's so many people who don't have that ability. And I think gratitude is just like, it just carries so much.
Yeah. Oh, and I love how you say that just so powerfully, because like there are times like where, of course, like I'll have a bad run sometimes and I'll be like, oh man, like this stinks, like blah, blah. But then you think back to the times that you were injured and like the only thing you wanted to do in that moment is run. Like I always say, like the first run after an injury pain-free feels so much better than any finish line you can ever cross. Like I fully believe that to my extent. And I'm sure like you see that with your clients too and everything. And so, and we can lose sight of it if we've been running for a while, maybe uninjured, and lose the gratitude. So that was super powerful way to end the podcast, and I couldn't agree more. And Dr. Sarah, this is amazing. Thank you for being on the podcast. So excited to continue to see you crush your training for your next 50K. And I'm gonna go get my hip strength on later today for sure.
Nice. Thanks so much for having me on, Joe. I appreciate you.
Of course. Appreciate you too.